By the time we wake, the storm has cleared. We bundle ourselves with insulation taken from the ship's walls and set out into the bleakness. Not a cloud mars the marbled blue-black sky. We head toward the sun, which stains the horizon a cooling shade of molten iron. Autumn has few days left. We head for the spires with plans of lighting fires as we go, in hopes of signaling the few Valkyrie scouts active in the area. But smoke will also bring the eaters. We scan the mountains as we pass, wary of the cannibal tribes and of the fact that somewhere ahead, Cassius and maybe Aja trudge through the snow with a troop of special forces operators. By midday, we find evidence of their passing. Churned snow outside a rocky alcove, large enough for several dozen men. They camped there to wait out the storm. A cairn of stacked stones lies near the campsite. One of the stones has been carved with a razor and reads, Per aspera ad astra.
It's Cassius's handwriting.
Pulling off the rocks, we find the corpses of two blues and a silver. Their weaker bodies froze in the night. Even here, Cassius had the decency to bury them. We replace the rocks as Ragnar lopes ahead, following the tracks at a speed we can't match. We follow after. An hour later, man-made thunder rumbles in the distance, accompanied by the lonely shriek of distant pulse fists. Ragnar returns soon after, eyes shining with excitement.
I followed the tracks.
And?
It is Aja and Cassius with a troop of greys and three peerless.
Aja is here?
Yes. They flee on foot through a mountain pass in the direction of Asgard. A tribe of eaters harries them. Bodies litter the way. Dozens. They sprang an ambush and failed. More come.
How much gear do they have?
No grav boots. Scarab skin only. But they have packs. They left the pulse armor behind at just 2 kilometers north. Out of energy.
Holiday looks at the horizon and touches Trigg's pistol on her hip.
Can we catch him?
They carry many supplies. Water, food, injured men now too. Yes, we can overtake them.
Why are we here? It's not to hunt Aja and Cassius down. The only thing that matters is getting Ragnar to the spires.
Aja killed my brother.
Trigg? The one you mentioned? I didn't know. But still, we can't be pulled to the side by vengeance. We can't fight 2 dozen men.
What if they reach Asgard before we reach the spires? Then we're cooked.
Mustang's not convinced.
Can you kill Aja?
Yes.
Mustang, this is an opportunity. When else will they be so exposed? Without their legions? Without the pride of gold protecting them? These are champions. Like Severo says, when you have the chance to waste your enemy, you do it. This is one time I'd agree with the mad bastard. If we can take them off the board, the Sovereign loses 2 Furies in 1 week. And Cassius is Octavia's link to Mars and the Great Families here. And if we expose her negotiations with you to him, we fracture that alliance. We sever Mars from the Society.
An enemy divided. I like it.
And we owe them a debt. Forlorn, Queen, Trigg. They came here to hunt us. Now, we hunt them.
The trail is unmistakable. Corpses litter the snow. Dozens of eaters. Bodies still smoking from pulse fire near a narrow mountain pass where the obsidians sprang an ambush on the golds. They did not understand the firepower the golds could bring to bear. Huge craters pock the craggy slopes. Deeper imprints in the snow mark the passing of aurochs, huge steer-like animals with shaggy coats that the obsidian ride. The pass widens into a thin alpine forest that skins an expanse of rolling hills. Gradually, The craters decrease, and we begin seeing discarded pulse fists and rifles, and several grey bodies with arrows or axes embedded in them. The obsidian dead are closer to the gold trail now, and bear razor wounds. There's dozens with missing limbs, clean decapitations. Cassius's band is running out of ammunition, and now Olympic knights are doing the work up close. Yet the wind still crackles with gunfire kilometers ahead. We pass moaning obsidian eaters who lie dying from bullet wounds. But it's only over a wounded grey that Ragnar stops. The man's still alive, but barely. An iron axe is buried in his stomach. He wheezes up at an unfamiliar sky. Ragnar crouches over him. Recognition goes through the grey's eyes as he sees the stain's uncovered face.
Close your eyes,
Ragnar says, pressing the man's empty rifle back in his hands.
Think of home.
The man closes his eyes, and with a twist, Ragnar breaks his neck and sets his head gently back on the snow. A shrill horn echoes across the mountain range.
They call off the hunt. Immortality is not worth the price today.
We pick up our pace. Kilometers to our right, mounted eaters on aurochs skirt the edges of the woods, heading for their high mountain camps. They do not see us as we move through the pine taiga. Holiday watches the hunting party disappear behind a hill through the scope of her rifle.
They carried two golds, didn't recognize them. They weren't dead yet.
We all feel the chill. It's an hour later that we spy our quarry beneath us in an uneven snowfield striped with crevasses. Two arms of forest hug the snowfield. Aja and Cassius chose an exposed route instead of continuing through the treacherous forest where they lost so many greys. There's four left in the company, three golds and a grey. They wear black scarab skin, cloaked with pelts and extra layers they stripped from the dead cannibals. They move at a breakneck pace, the rest of their party massacred in the depths of the woods. We can't tell which is Aja or Cassius because of the masks and the similar shapes they make under the cloaks. Initially, I wanted to lie in wait and ambush them to take the tactical initiative, but I remember how the optics were missing from their boxes and assume Aja and Cassius are both wearing them. With thermal vision, they'll see us hiding under snow. Might even see us if we hide inside the bellies of dead aurochs or seals. So, instead, I have Ragnar lead me on the path he found to cut them off at a pass they must travel through and block their path to draw their eyes. I'm panting beside Ragnar, coughing the cold out of aching lungs, when the party of four arrives on our chosen ground. They jog along the edge of a crevasse in improvised snowshoes, hunched against the weight of food and survival gear they drag behind them on little makeshift sleds. Textbook Legion survival skills, courtesy of the military schools of the Martian Fields. All four wear black optics visors with smoky glass lenses. It's eerie as they see us. No expressions on the optics or masked faces. So it feels like they expected us to be here, waiting at the edge of the snowfield, blocking the pass out. My eyes dart back and forth between them. Cassius is easy enough to distinguish by his height. But which of the four is Aja? I'm torn between two thick golds, each shorter than Cassius. Then I see my old Razor Master's weapon dangling from her belt.
Aja!
I remove the sealskin balaclava. Cassius pulls off his mask. His hair is sweaty, face flushed. He alone carries a pulse fist, but I know its charge must be running low, based on the dispersion patterns of the dead cannibals behind them. His razor unfurls, as do the rest. They look like long red tongues, blood frozen on the blades.
Darrow! I saw you sink!
I swim just as well as you! Remember?
I look past him.
Aja!
You going to let Cassius do all the talking?
Finally, she steps from the other to stand by the tall knight, removing from around her waist the rope that attaches her to her makeshift sled. She doffs her scarab skin mask, revealing her dark face and bald head. Steam swirls. She scans the crevasses that thread their way through the snow, and the rocks and trees, the pen in the snowfield, wondering where my ambush will come from. She remembers Europa well enough, but she can't know who my crew was, or how many survived.
An abomination and a rabid dog.
Her eyes linger on Ragnar before coming back to me. The scarab skin she wears is unmarked. Can she really not have taken a single wound from the obsidian?
I see your carver has pieced you back together, Ruster.
Well enough to kill your sister. Pity it wasn't you.
She makes no reply. How many times have I seen her kill Quinn in memory? How many times have I seen her rob Lorne of his razor as he lay dead from the jackal and Lilith's blades? I gesture to the weapon.
That doesn't belong to you.
You were born to serve, not speak, abomination. Do not address me.
She glances up to the sky, where Phobos glitters on the eastern horizon. Red and white lights flicker around it. It's a space battle, which means Sevro has captured ships. But how many? Aja frowns and exchanges a worried look with Cassius.
I have long awaited this moment, Aja.
Ah, my father's favorite pet. Has the stained convinced you he's tamed? I wonder if he told you how he liked to be rewarded after a fight in the Cercada. After the applause faded and he cleaned the blood from his hands, father would send him young pinks to satisfy his animal lusts. How greedy he was with them. How frightened they were of him.
Her voice is flat and bored of this ice, of this conversation, of us. All she wants is what we have to give her, and that is a challenge. After all the obsidian bodies behind her, she still is not tired of blood.
Have you ever seen an obsidian rut? You'd think twice about taking off their collars, Ruster. They have appetites you can't imagine.
Ragnar steps forward, holding his razors in either hand. He unfastens the white fur he took from the eaters and lets it fall behind him. It's strange, being here, surrounded by wind and snow, stripped of our armies, our navies. The only thing protecting each of our lives, little coils of metal. The hugeness of the Antarctic laughs at our size and self-importance, thinking how easily it could snuff out the heat in our little chests. But our lives mean so much more than the frail bodies that carry them. Ragnar's step forward is a sign to Mustang and Holiday in the trees. Aim true, Holiday.
Your father bought me, Aja. Shamed me, made me his devil, a thing. The child inside fled, the hope vanished. I was Ragnar no more.
He touches his own chest.
But I am Ragnar today, tomorrow, forevermore. I am son of the Spires. Brother of Sephi the Quiet, brother of Darrow of Lycos, and Sevro our Barca. I am the shield of Tinos. I follow my heart. And when yours beats no more, foul knight, I will pull it from your chest and feed it to the griffin of the...
Cassius scans the craggy rocks and stunted trees that cup the snowfield to his left. His eyes narrow when they fall upon a cluster of broken timber at the base of a rock formation. Then, without warning, he shoves Aja forward. She stumbles, and just behind her, where she stood, the head of their remaining grey explodes. blood splatters the snow as the crack of Holliday's rifle echoes from the mountains. More bullets tear into the snow around Cassius and Aja. The Fury moves behind the third gold, using his body as cover. Two bullets slam into his scarab skin, penetrating the strong polymer. Cassius rolls on his shoulder and uses much of the last juice from his pulse fist. The hillside erupts, rocks glowing, exploding, snow vaporizing. And under that noise is the sound of a bowstring releasing. Aja hears it too. She moves fast, spinning as an arrow fired by Mustang from the woods careens toward her head. It misses by centimeters. Cassius fires on Mustang's position on the hill, shattering trees and superheating rocks. Can't tell if she's hit. Can't spare the seconds to look, because Ragnar and I use the distraction to charge, vision narrowing, sling blade curving into form, closing the distance over the snow. Pulse fist glowing in his hand, Cassius turns, just as I bear down on him. He fires the pulse fist. It's a weak charge that I dive beneath, hitting the ground and rolling up like a Lycos tumbler. He fires again. The pulse fist is dead, battery drained from firing on the hillside. Ragnar hurls one of his razors at Aja like a huge throwing knife. It flips end over end in the air. She doesn't move. It slams into her. She spins backward. For a moment, I think he's killed her. But then she turns back to us, holding the razor by the hilt in her right hand. She caught it. A dark fear sweeps through me as all of Lorne's warnings about Aja come rushing back.
Never fight a river, and never fight Aja.
The four of us smash together, turning into a clumsy mash of cracking whips and clattering blades, scrambling and twisting and bending. Our razors faster than our own eyes can track. Aja swipes diagonally at my legs as I go for hers. Ragnar and Cassius aim for each other's necks in quick, no-look thrusts. Identical strategies all. It's so awkward. We all almost kill one another in the first half second. Yet each gambit misses by a hair. We separate, stumbling backward, humorless smiles on our faces. A bizarre kinship, as we remember we all speak the same martial language. All that hateful breed of human Dancer told me about before I was carved, the ones Lorne lived among and despised all the while. I shatter the weird piece first, lashing forward in a tight series of thrusts at Cassius's right side, peeling him away from Aja so Ragnar can take her down singly. Behind Cassius, Mustang stirs from among the rubble. Rushing across the snow, huge obsidian bow in hand, still 50 meters away. I sweep my razor, whip twice at Cassius's legs, retracting it into a blade as he swings diagonally at my head. The blow rattles my arm as I catch it halfway along the razor's curve. He's stronger than I am, faster than he was the last time we fought. And he's practiced now against the curved blade, training with Aja, no doubt. He forces me back. I stumble, fall. Between his legs, I see the Fury and the Stained tearing into each other. She stabs him through his left thigh. Another arrow whispers through the air. It slams into Cassius's back. His scarab skin holds. Off balance, he swings again in a tight set of eight moves. I throw myself backward, just as the razor hisses through the air where my head had been. I sprawl on the snow, centimeters from the edge of a huge crevasse. Scrambling up as Cassius rushes me, I block another downward swing, teetering on the edge. I fall backward and push off the edge as hard as I can so I land and clear the other side, using my agility to avoid his onslaught. Behind him, Aja spins under Ragnar's blade, slicing at his hamstrings. She's peeling him apart. Cassius pursues me, hurdling the crevasse and swinging down at me. I block the blade. It would have opened me from shoulder to opposite hip. I throw a rock at his face, gain my feet. He slams his blade down again in a feint, pivots his wrist, and swings to carve off my knees. I stumble to the side, barely dodging. He converts his razor to a whip, cracks it at my legs, and rips them out from under me. I fall. He kicks me in the chest. Wind gushes out of me. He stands on my wrist, pinning my razor down, and is about to plunge his razor into my heart, his face a mask of determination.
Stop!
Mustang shouts. She's 20 meters away, aiming her bow at Cassius, hand quivering from the strain of the taut string.
I will put you down!
No, you wouldn't.
The bowstring snaps. He jerks his razor up to deflect the arrow. Misses. Slower than Aja. The serrated iron tip punches through the front of his throat and out the back of his neck. The feather fletching, scratching the underside of his dimpled chin. There's no spray of blood. Just a meaty, wet gurgle. He flops back, hitting the ground hard, gagging, hacking hideously. His feet kick as he clutches the arrow, hissing for breath, eyes inches from my own. Mustang rushes to me. I scramble to my feet, away from Cassius, and grab my razor from the snow, pointing it at his thrashing body.
I'm Prime.
I tear my eyes from my old friend as blood pools beneath him, and he fights for his life.
Help Ragnar!
Over Cassius's body, we see the Stained and Aja whirling at each other on the edge of a crevasse. Blood paints the snow around them, all of it coming from Ragnar. But still, he presses the woman knight back, a furious song cascading out of his throat, beating her down, overwhelming her with his 250 kilograms of mass. Sparks flare from their blades. She caves before him now, unable to match the anger of the banished Prince of the Spires. Heels skidding on the snow, arms shuddering, bending back away from Ragnar, bending like a willow. His song roars louder.
No.
I turn to Mustang.
Shoot her!
They're too close!
I don't care!
She fires a shot. It rips inches past Aja's head. But it does not matter. Ragnar has already fallen into the trap the woman has laid for him. Mustang doesn't see it yet. She will. It's one of the many Lorne taught me. The one Ragnar could not have learned because he never had a razor master. He only ever had his rage and years of fighting with solid weapons, not the whip. Mustang loads another arrow. As Ragnar swings down at Aja with a blacksmith's overhead strike, Aja raises her rigid blade to meet his. She activates the whip function. Her blade goes limp. Expecting to meet the resistance of solid polyene fiber, Ragnar's whole weight carries down on empty air. He's athletic enough to slow the movement, so his blade doesn't smash into the ground, and against a lesser opponent, he would have recovered with ease. But Aja was the greatest student of Lorne Au Arcos. She's already spinning to the side, contracting the whip back into a blade, and using her momentum to hack sideways at Ragnar as she finishes her spin. The movement is simple, laconic. Like one of the ballerinas Mustang and Roke would watch at Aegea's opera house as I studied with Lorne, pivoting through a fouette. If I didn't see the blood paint her blade and spray a delicate arc of red across the snow, I could be convinced that she missed. Aja does not miss. Ragnar tries to turn and face her, but his legs betray him, crumpling underneath. His gaping wound, a bloody smile against the white of his sealskin. Aja cut into his lower back, through his spinal cord, and out the front of his stomach at the belly button. He flops down at the lip of a crevasse, razor skipping across the ice.
No!
I howl in rage, in crushing disbelief, and charge Aja as Mustang fires her bow, running with me. Aja sidesteps Mustang's arrows and stabs Ragnar twice more in the stomach as he lies, grasping his wound. His body jerks. The blade slides in and out. Aja sets her feet now, preparing for me, when her eyes go wide. She steps back, marveling at something in the sky above my head. Mustang fires twice in quick succession. Aja's head jerks. She twists away from us, spinning backward to the edge of the crevasse. Ice caves beneath her foot, crumbling off into the crevasse. Her arms windmill, but she can't regain her balance as her eyes meet mine and she pitches with the ice, head first into the darkness. Aja is gone. The crevasse is deep, sides narrowing away into darkness. I rush back to Ragnar as Mustang stares up at the hillside and the clouds, bow at the ready. She only has 3 arrows left.
I don't see anything.
Reaper.
Ragnar's chest heaves, panting heavily. Dark lifeblood pulses out of his open stomach. Aja could have finished him quickly with the 2 thrusts when he was on the ground. Instead, she stabbed his lower gut so he would suffer as he died. I push on the 1st wound, red to my elbows, but there's so much blood, I don't even know what to do. A resgun can't fix what Aja has done. It can't even hold him together. The tears sting my eyes. Can hardly see. Steam billows from the wound. My frozen fingers tingling with warmth from the blood. Ragnar blanches at the blood. An embarrassed look on his face as he whispers apologies.
It could be the cannibals.
Mustang says, regarding Aja's distraction.
Can he move?
No.
She glances down at him, more stoic than I am.
We can't stay here.
I ignore her. I've watched too many friends die to let Ragnar go. I led him to fight Aja. I convinced him to come home. I will not let him slip away. I owe him that much. If it is the last thing I do, foolish or not, I will defend him. I will find some way to fix him, get him to a yellow. Even if the cannibals come, even if it costs me my life, I will not leave him. But thinking it doesn't make it true. Doesn't give me magical powers. Whatever plan I make, it seems the world is content to undo it.
Reaper.
Save your strength, my friend. It's going to take all of it to get you out of here.
She was fast. So fast.
She's gone now,
I say, though I can't know for sure.
I always dreamed of a good death. This does not seem good.
His words fishhook a sob from my chest into my throat.
It's fine. He'll be fine. Once we get you patched up, Mickey will fix you proper. We'll get you to the spires. Call in an evac.
Darrow?
Ragnar blinks hard up at me, trying to focus his eyes. He reaches for the sky with a hand.
Sevi.
No, it's me, Ragnar. It's Darrow.
Darrow!
What?
Sevi.
Ragnar points. I follow his finger to the sky above. I see nothing. Just the faint clouds shifting in the wind that comes in from the sea. I hear only the sound of Cassius's hacking and the creak of Mustang's bow and Holiday limping toward us over the snow. Then, I see why Aja fled, as 3,000 kilograms of winged predator pierces the clouds. Body, that of a lion. Wings, front legs and head, that of an eagle. Feathers, white. Beak hooked and black. Head the size of a grown red. The griffin is huge. Underside of its wings painted with the screaming faces of sky blue demons. They stretch 10 meters wide as the beast lands in the snow in front of me. The earth shakes. Its eyes are pale blue. Glyphs and wards painted along its black beak in white. Upon its back sits a lean, terrible human who blows mournfully on a white horn. More horns echo from the clouds above, and 12 more griffins slam down into the mountain pass, some clinging to the sharp rock walls above us, others pawing at the snow. The first griffin rider, the one who blew the horn, is cloaked head to toe in filthy white fur and wears a bone helmet crested with a single spine of blue feathers which trail down the back of the neck. Not a rider is under 2 meters tall.
Sunborn!
One of them calls in their sluggish dialect as she rushes to the side of their silent leader. The speaker strips her helmet to reveal a brutish face, thick with scars and piercings, before falling to her knee and touching her forehead with a gloved palm in a sign of respect. A blue handprint covers her face.
We saw the flame in the sky.
Her voice falters when she sees my sling blade. The other riders strip their helms, dismounting in a rush as they see our hair and eyes. Not a rider among them is a man. The women's faces are painted with huge sky blue handprints, a little eye drawn in the center of each. White hair flows in long braids down their backs. Black eyes peer from hooded lids. Iron and bone piercings bridge noses and hook lips and notch ears. Only the lead rider has yet to remove her helmet or kneel. She steps toward us, in a trance.
Sister. My sister.
Sephi.
Mustang eyes the black human tongues on the prize hook on the obsidian's left hip. She wears no gloves. The backs of her hands are tattooed with glyphs.
Do you know me?
A tentative smile on quivering lips as the rider approaches.
You must.
The rider catalogues his scars from behind her mask. Eyes dark and wide.
I know you. I would know you if the world were dark and we were withered and old. If the ice was melted and the wind quiet.
She drifts forward, step by step.
I taught you the 49 names of the ice. The 34 breaths of the wind. Though you could only ever remember 32.
She gives him nothing. But the other riders are already whispering his name and looking at us as if by accompanying him and possessing a curved blade, they've pieced together who I am. Ragnar continues, voice carrying the last of his strength.
I carried you on my shoulders to watch 5 breakings and let you braid my hair with your ribbons and played with the dolls you made from seal leather and threw balls of ice at old Proudfoot. I am your brother. And when the men of the Weeping Sun took me and the harvest of our kin to the Chained Lands, do you remember what I told you?
Despite his wound, the man reeks of power. This is his land. This is his home. And he is as vast here as I was upon my claw drill. The gravity of him draws Sephi closer. She collapses to her knees and strips away her bone helmet. Sephi the Quiet, famed daughter of Aelia Snow Sparrow, is raw and majestic, face severe, angled like a crow's, her eyes too small, too close together, her lips thin, purple in the cold, and permanently pursed in thought. White hair shaved down the left side, braided and falling to the waist on the right. A wing tattoo encircled by astral runes is livid blue on the left side of her pale skull. But what makes her unique among the obsidians, and the object of their admiration, is that her skin is without pox or scars. The only ornament she wears is a single iron bar through her nose. and when she blinks down at Ragnar's wound, the blue eyes tattooed on the back of her eyelids pierce through me. She extends a hand to her brother, not to touch him, but to feel the breath steam before his mouth and nose. It is not enough for Ragnar. He seizes her hand and presses it fiercely to his chest so she can feel his fading heartbeat. Tears of joy gather in his eyes, and when they spill from Sephi's down her cheeks to carve paths through her blue war paint, his voice cracks.
I told you I would return.
Her eyes leave him to follow Aja's tracks into the crevasse. She clicks her tongue, and four Valkyrie stake ropes into the snow and rappel down into the darkness to seek out Aja. The rest guard their war leader and watch the hills. Elegant recurve bows at the ready.
We have to fly him to the spires, to your shaman.
Sephi does not look at me.
It's too late.
Snow gathers on Ragnar's white beard.
Let me die here on the ice. Under the wild sky.
No! We can save you.
The world feels very distant and unimportant. His blood continues to leave him. But there is no more sadness in my friend. Sephi has chased it away.
It is no great thing to die. Not when one has lived.
He smiles, trying to comfort me. Even now. But he wears the unjustness of his life and death upon his face.
I owe that to you. But there is much undone. Sephi. Did my men find you?
Sephi nods, staying hunched over her brother, her white hair flying about her in the wind. He looks to me.
Dano. I know you think words will suffice. They will not. Not with my mother.
This was what he did not tell me. Why he was so quiet on the shuttle. Why he carried dread upon his shoulders. He was coming home to kill his mother. And now he's giving me permission to do just that. I glance over to Mustang. She heard too, and wears her heartbreak on her face. As much for my shattered fool's dream of a better world as for my dying friend. He shudders in pain, and Sephi pulls a knife from her boot, unwilling to watch him suffer any longer. Ragnar shakes his head at her and nods to me. He wants me to do it. I shake my head as if I can wake up from this nightmare. Sephi stares at me fiercely. Daring me to contradict her brother's last wishes.
I will die with my friends.
I numbly let my razor slither into my hand and hold it over his chest. There's peace at last in Ragnar's wet eyes. It's all I can do to be strong for him.
I will give Eo your love. I will make a house for you in the Vale of your fathers. It will be beside my own. Join me there when you die. But I am no builder. So take your time. We will wait.
I nod like I still believe in the Vale. Like I still think it waits for me. And for him.
Your people will be free. On my life, I promise this. And I will see you soon.
He smiles as he stares up at the sky. Sephi frantically puts her axe in Ragnar's palm so that he can die as a warrior, a weapon in hand, and secure his place in the halls of Valhalla.
No, Sephi.
He drops the axe and takes snow in his left hand, her hand with his right.
Live for more.
He nods to me. The wind whips. The snow falls. Ragnar watches the sky where the cold lights of Phobos glitter on as I silently slide the metal into his heart. Death comes like nightfall, and I cannot tell the moment when the light leaves him, when his heart no longer beats and his eyes no longer see. But I know he's gone. I feel it in the chill that settles over me, in the sound of the lonely, hungry wind, and the dread silence in the black eyes of Sephi the Quiet. My friend, my protector, Ragnar Valaris, has left this world. I'm numb with grief, unable to think of anything but how Severo will react when he hears Ragnar has died, how my nieces and nephews will never braid another bow into the friendly giant's hair. Part of my soul has departed and will never return. He was my protector. He gave so many strength. Now, without him, I cling to the back of a Valkyrie as her griffin rises away from the bloody snow. Even as we soar through the clouds on great beating wings, even as I see the Valkyrie spires for the first time, I feel no awe, just numbness. The spires are a twisting, vertiginous spine of mountain peaks so ludicrous in their abrupt rise from the Arctic plains that only a maniacal gold at the controls of a Lovelock engine with 50 years of tectonic manipulation and a solar system of resources could conspire to create them. Probably just to see if they could. Dozens of stone spires weave together like spiteful lovers, mist shrouding them. Griffins making nests on their peaks, crows and eagles in the lower reaches. Upon a high rock wall, 7 skeletons hang from chains. The ice is stained with blood and the droppings of animals. This is the home of the only race to ever threaten gold. And we come, stained in the blood of its banished prince. Sephi and her riders searched the crevasse in which Aja fell. They found nothing but boot prints. No body, no blood. Nothing to abate the rage that burns inside Sephi. I think she would have remained over her brother's body for hours more had they not heard drums beating in the distance. Eaters who had mustered greater strength and intended to challenge the Valkyrie for possession of the fallen gods. Wrath stained her face as she stood over Cassius, her axe in hand. He is one of the first golds she'll ever have seen without armor. Maybe the first aside from Mustang. And I think, stained with the blood of her brother, she would have killed him there on the snow. I know I would have let her, and so too would have Mustang. But she relented at the urging of her Valkyrie. Clicking her tongue to her riders, sheathing her axe and signaling them to mount. Now Cassius is tied to the saddle of a Valkyrie to my right. The arrow missed his jugular, but death might come for him even without a kiss from Sephi's axe. We land in a high alcove, cut into the highest reach of a corkscrew spire. Slaves from enemy obsidian clans, eyes branded into blindness, receive our griffins. Their faces painted yellow for cowardice. Iron doors groan shut behind, sealing us off from the wind. The riders jump from their saddles before we land to help carry Ragnar away from us, deeper into the rock city. There's a commotion as several dozen armed warriors push their way into the griffin stable and confront Sephi. They gesture wildly at us, their accents thicker than the Nagal I learned with Mickey's uploads and my studies at the academy. But I understand enough to glean that the newer group of warriors is shouting that we should be in chains, and something about heretics. Sephi's women are shouting back, saying we are friends of Ragnar, and they point feverishly to the gold of our hair. They don't know how to treat us, or Cassius, who several of the warriors pull away from us like dogs fighting for scrap meat. The arrows still in his neck, whites of his eyes huge. He reaches for me in terror, as the obsidians drag him across the floor. His hand grasps mine, holds for a moment, and then he's gone down a torchlit hall, borne away by half a dozen giants. The rest cluster around us, huge iron weapons in hand, the stink of their furs thick and nauseating, quieting only when an old, stout woman with a hand-shaped tattoo on her forehead pushes through their ranks to speak with Zephy, one of her mother's war chiefs. She gestures upward toward the ceiling with large hand motions.
What is she saying? They're talking about Phobos. They see the lights from the battle. They think the gods are fighting. These ones think we should be prisoners, not guests. Let them take your weapons.
Like hell!
Holiday steps back with her rifle. I grab the barrel and push it down, handing them my razor.
Oh, this is bloody spectacular.
They shackle our arms and legs with great iron manacles, taking care not to touch our skin or hair, and jerk us toward a tunnel by the spire's guards, away from Sephi's Valkyrie. But as we go, I catch sight of Sephi watching after us, a strange, conflicted look on her white face. After being dragged down several dozen dimly lit stairwells, we're shoved into a windowless cell of carved stone and stifling smoky air. Seal oil smoulders in iron braziers, stinging our eyes. I trip on a raised flagstone and fall to the floor. There, I slam my chains against the stone, feeling the anger, the helplessness. All the things happening so fast, whipping me around so I can't tell which way's up. But I can think long enough to grasp the futility of my actions, my plans. Mustang and Holiday watch me in heavy silence. One day into my grand plan, and Ragnar is already dead.
Are you all right?
What do you think?
She says nothing in reply. Not the fragile sort of person to take offense and whimper out how she's just trying to help. She knows the pain of loss well enough.
We need to have a plan.
Ragnar was our plan. He was the entire sodden plan.
We can salvage it.
And how the hell do you expect to do that? We don't have weapons anymore, and they don't exactly look tickled pink to see us. Oh, they're probably gonna eat us.
These ones aren't cannibals.
You're willing to bet your leg on that, Missy?
Alia is the key. We can still convince her. It will be difficult without Ragnar, but that's the only way. Convince her that he died trying to bring their people the truth.
Didn't you hear him? He said words wouldn't work.
They still can.
Darrow, give yourself a moment.
A moment? My people are dying in orbit. Severo is at war, and he's depending on us to bring him an army. We don't have the luxury of taking a bloody damn moment.
Darrow!
Mustang tries to interrupt. I keep going, methodically sorting through the options. How we must hunt down Aja, rejoin with the Suns. She puts a hand on my arm.
Darrow, stop! Communication.
I falter, losing track of where I was, slipping away from the comfort of logic, and falling straight into the emotion of it all. Ragnar's blood is under my nails. All he wanted was to come home to his people and lead them out of darkness like he saw me doing with mine. I robbed him of that choice by leading the attack on Aja. I don't cry. There isn't time for it. But I sit there with my head in my hands. Mustang touches my shoulder.
He smiled in the end. Do you know why? Because he knew what he was doing was right. He was fighting for love. You've made a family of your friends. You always have. It made Ragnar a better man to know you. So you didn't get him killed. You helped him live. But you have to live now.
She sits next to me.
I know you want to believe the best in people. But think how long it took you to get through to Ragnar. To win over Tactus or me. What can you do in a day, a week? This place, it's not our world. They don't care about our rules or our morality. We will die here, if we do not escape.
You don't think Alia will listen?
Why would she? Obsidians only value strength. And where is ours? Ragnar even thought he would have to kill his mother. She won't listen. Do you know the word for surrender in Nagal? Ryoga. The word for subjugation? Ryoga. What's the word for slavery? Ryoga. Without Ragnar to lead them, what do you think is going to happen if you release them on the society? Alia Snow Sparrow is a black-blooded tyrant, and the rest of the war chiefs are no better. She might even be expecting us. Even if we've hacked the Gold's monitoring systems, the Golds know she's his mother. They could have told her to expect him. She could be reporting to them right now.
When I looked up at my father as a boy, I thought being a man was having control. Being the master and commander of your own destiny. How could any boy know that freedom is lost the moment you become a man? Things start to count, to press in, constricting slowly, inevitably, creating a cage of inconveniences and duties and deadlines and failed plans and lost friends. I'm tired of people doubting, of people choosing to believe they know what is possible because of what has happened before.
Escaping won't be that easy.
Step one.
Mustang slips free of her manacles. She used a little shard of bone to pick the lock.
Oh, where'd you learn that?
You think the Institute was my first school? Your turn.
She reaches for my manacles.
As I see it, we can rush them when they open the... What's wrong?
I've pulled my hands back from her.
I'm not leaving.
Darrow.
Ragnar was my friend. I told him I would help his people. I will not run to save myself. I will not let him die in vain. The only way out is through.
The Obsidians...
are needed. Without them, I can't fight Gold Legions. Not even with your help.
All right. Then how do you intend to change Alia's mind?
I think I'll need your help with that.
Hours later, we are guided to the center of a cavernous throne room, built for giants. It's lit by seal oil lamps that belch out black smoke along the walls. The iron doors slam shut behind us, and we're left alone before a throne, upon which sits the largest human being I've ever seen. She watches us from the far side of the room, more statue than woman. We approach awkwardly in our chains, boots over the slick black floor, till we come before Alia Snow Sparrow, Queen of the Valkyrie. Across her lap lies the body of her dead son. Alia glares down at us. She is as colossal as Ragnar, but ancient and wicked, like the oldest tree of some primeval forest, the kind that drinks the soil and blocks the sun for lesser trees and watches them wither and yellow and die and does nothing but reach her branches higher and dig her roots deeper. The wind has armored her face in dead skin and calluses. Her hair is stringy and long, the color of dirty snow. She sits on a cushion of furs, stacked inside the ribcage of the skeleton of what must have been the largest griffin ever carved. The griffin's head screams silently down at us from above her. The wings spread against the stone wall, 10 meters across. On her head is a crown of black glass. At her feet is her fabled war chest, which is locked in times of peace by a great iron device. Her knotty hands are covered in blood. This is the primal realm, and though I would know what to say to a queen who sits upon a throne, I have no bloody damn clue what to say to a mother who sits with her own son dead in her lap and looks at me as though I am some worm that's just slithered up from the taiga. It seems she doesn't much care that I've lost my tongue. Hers is sharp enough.
There is a great heresy in our lands against the gods who rule the thousand stars of the abyss.
Her voice rumbles like that of an old crocodile. But it is not her language. It is ours. High lingo, Aureate. A sacred tongue, known by few in these lands. Mostly the shaman, who commune with the gods. Spies, in other words. Alia's fluency startles Mustang, but not me. I know how the low rise under the power of the mighty, and this merely confirms what I've long suspected. Slag and Gamma are not the only favored slaves of the worlds.
A heresy taught by wicked prophets with wicked aims. For a summer and a winter, it has slithered through us, poisoning my people and the people of the Dragonspine and the blooded tents and rattling caves. Poisoning them with lies that spit in the eye of our people.
She leans down from her throne, blackheads huge on her nose, wrinkles deep ravines around pitch eyes.
Lies that say a stained sun will return and he will bring a man to guide us from this land. A morning star in the darkness. I have sought these heretics out to learn of their whispers, to see if the gods spoke through them. They did not. Evil spoke through them. And so I have hunted the heretics, broken their bones with my own hands, peeled their flesh and set them upon the rock of the spires to be eaten as carrion by the fowl of the ice.
The seven bodies who dangled from the chains outside. Ragnar's friends.
This I do for my people. Because I love my people. Because the children of my loins are few and those of my heart many. For I knew the heresy to be a lie. Ragnar, blood of my blood, would never return. To return would mean the breaking of oaths to me, to his people, to the gods who watch over us from Asgard on high.
She looks down at her dead son.
And then I woke into this nightmare.
She closes her eyes, breathes deep, and opens them again.
Who are you to bring the corpse of my bestborn to my spire?
My name is Darrow of Lycos. This is Virginia Au Augustus and Holiday T. Nakamura.
Alia's eyes ignore Holiday and twitch over to Mustang. Even at nearly 2 meters, she seems a child in this huge room.
We came with Ragnar as a diplomatic mission on behalf of the Rising.
Oh, the Rising. And who are you to my son?
She eyes my hair with more disdain than a mortal should have for a god. Something deeper is at play here.
Are you Ragnar's master?
I am his brother.
His brother?
Your son swore an oath of servitude to me when I took him from a gold. He offered me stains, and I offered him his freedom. Since then, he has been my brother.
He died free?
The way she says it intones that deeper understanding. One Mustang notes.
He did. His men, the ones you have hanging on the walls outside, would have told you that I lead a rebellion against the Golds, who rule over you. Who took Ragnar from you, as they took your other children. And they would have told you, as well as all your people, that Ragnar was the greatest of my generals. He was a good man. He was honest and decent.
I know, my son. I swam with him in the ice floes when he was a boy. Taught him the names of the snow, of the storms, and took him upon my griffin to show him the spine of the world. His hands clutched my hair and sang for joy as we rose through the clouds above. My son was without fear.
She remembers that day very differently than Ragnar did.
I know my son, and I do not need a stranger to tell me of his spirit.
Then you should ask yourself, Queen, what would make him return here? What would make him send his men here if he knew it meant breaking his oath to you and your people?
Alia does not speak as she examines Mustang with those hungry eyes.
Brother.
She mocks the word again, looking back to me.
I wonder, would you use brothers as you have used my son? Bringing him here as if he is the key to unlocking the giants of the ice?
She looks around the hall, so I see the deeds carved into the stone that stretches the height of 15 men above us. I've never met an obsidian artisan. They send us only their warriors.
As if you could use a mother's love against her. This is the way of men. I can smell your ambition, your plans. I do not know the abyss, O worldly warlord, but I know the ice. I know the serpents that slither in the hearts of men. I questioned the heretics myself. I know what you are. I know you descend from a lower creature than us. A red. I have seen reds. They are like children. Little elves who live in the bones of the world. But you stole the body of an Aesir, of a son born. You call yourself a breaker of chains, but you are a maker of them. You wish to bind us to you, using our strength to make you great, like every man.
She leans over my dead friend to leer at me. And I see what this woman respects. Why Ragnar believed he would have to kill her and take her throne. And why Mustang wanted to flee. Strength. And where is mine, she wonders.
You know many things of him, but you know nothing of me. Yet you insult me.
Alia frowns. It's clear she has no idea who Mustang is, and no wish to anger a true Gold, if, indeed, Mustang is one. Her confidence wavers only a fraction.
I have laid no claims against you, Sunborn.
But you have. By suggesting he has evil wishes in store for your people, you too suggest that I collude with him. That I, his companion, am here with the same wicked intentions.
Then what are your intentions? Why do you accompany this creature?
To see if he was worth following.
And is he?
I don't know yet. What I do know is that millions will follow him. Do you know that number? Can you even comprehend it, Alia?
I know the number.
You asked my intentions. I will put it plainly. I am a warlord and queen like you. My dominion is larger than you can comprehend. I have metal ships in the abyss that carry more men than you have ever seen, that can crack the highest mountain in two. And I am here to tell you that I am not a god. Those men and women on Asgard are not gods. They are flesh and blood, like you, like me.
Alia rises slowly, bearing her huge son easily in her arms, and walks him to a stone altar and lays him upon it. She pours oil from a small urn onto a cloth and drapes it over Ragnar's face. Then she kisses the cloth, looking down at him.
This land cannot hold seed. It is ruled by wind and ice and barren rock. But you survive. Cannibals roam the hills. Enemy clans ache for your land. But you survive. You sell your sons, your daughters to your gods. But you survive. Tell me, Alia, why? Why live when all you live for is to serve? To watch your family wither away? I've watched mine go, each stolen from me one by one. My world is broken, and so is yours. But if you join your arms with mine, with Darrow, as Ragnar wanted, we can make a new world.
Alia turns back to us, beleaguered. Her steps are slow and measured as she comes before us.
Which would you fear more, Virginia or Augustus? A god or a mortal with the power of a god?
The question hangs between them, creating a rift words cannot mend.
A god cannot die, so a god has no fear. But mortal men, oh, how frightened they are that the darkness will come. How horribly they will fight to stay in the light.
Her corrupt voice chills my blood. She knows. Mustang and I realize it at the same terrible moment. Alia knows her gods are mortal. A new fear bubbles up from the deepest part of me. I'm a fool. We traveled all this distance to pull the wool from her eyes, but she's already seen the truth. Somehow, some way. Did the golds come to her because she is queen? Did she discover it herself? Before she sold Ragnar? After? It's no matter. She's already resigned herself to this world. To the lie.
There's another path,
I say desperately, knowing that Alia made her judgment against us before we ever entered the room.
Ragnar saw it. He saw a world where your people could leave the ice, where they could make their own destiny. Join me, and that world is possible. I will give you the means to take the power that will let you cross the stars like your ancestors, to walk unseen, to fly among the clouds on boots. You can live in the land of your choosing, where the wind is warm as flesh and the land is green instead of white. All you need to do is fight with me, like your son did.
No, little man. You cannot fight the sky. You cannot fight the river or the sea or the mountains, and you cannot fight the gods. So I will do my duty. I will protect my people. I will send you to Asgard in chains. I will let the gods on high decide your fate. My people will live on. Safi will inherit my throne, and I will bury my son in the ice from which he was born.
Morningstar, Book 3 of the Red Rising Saga, Part 1 by Pierce Brown, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2016 by Pierce Brown. All rights reserved. Recorded by arrangement with Pierce Brown, care of Liza Dawson Associates. Production copyright 2024, Graphic Audio LLC. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication is prohibited. Narrated by Stuart Crank, with performances by Stuart Crank as Darrow, John Vertulo as Severo, Jenna Sharp as Mustang, Andrew James Spooner as The Jackal, Laura C. Harris as Victra, Kimberly Gilbert as Holiday, and Bradley Foster Smith as Ragnar. Also with Andy Brownstein, Chris Davenport, Colleen Delaney, Danny Gavigan, Elena Anderson, Eric Messner, Ian Putnam, Joel David Santner, John Keelty, Kay Alluvian, Ken Jackson, Lucy Simons, Marnie Penning, Matthew Bassett, Michael Glenn, Michael John Casey, Nanette Savard, Nazia Chaudhry, Nia DeRusso, Peter Stray, Shanta Parasharaman, Stephanie Nemeth Parker, Steve Winall, Todd Schofield, Yasmin Twazon, and Zeke Alton. Directed and adapted for graphic audio by Dave Fernandez. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Dave Fernandez. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zitney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producers, Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. If you've enjoyed Morningstar Part 1, you may also enjoy The Serpent in Heaven from the Gunny Rose series by Charlene Harris. Keep listening to hear a sample clip from Rebecca Yarros's Fourth Wing, Book 1 of the Empyrean series. Now available in graphic audio, along with our whole catalog of exciting releases, at www.graphicaudio.net.
Standing with the Golden One tucked under an enormous, scarred black wing is the biggest dragon I've ever seen in my life. The unbonded black dragon Professor Kaori showed us in class. I don't even come close to reaching its ankle. The ground above me vibrates as it lowers its gigantic head, baring dripping teeth. Fear ripples through every cell in my body as its hot breath blows over me.
Step aside, Silver One.
I blink. Wait, what? Did he just speak to me?
Yes, you move.
There's zero room for argument in his tone, and I limp to the side, nearly stumbling over Oren's unconscious body as Tynan runs for the trees. The black dragon's eyes narrow to glare at Tynan, and he opens his mouth wide a second before fire shoots across the field, blasting heat against the side of my face and incinerating everything in its path, including Tynan. Flames crackle at the edges of the blackened path, and I turn slowly to face the dragon, wondering if I'm about to be next. His giant golden eyes study me, but I hold my ground, tilting my chin upward.
You should end the enemy at your feet.
My eyebrows jerk upward. His mouth didn't move. He spoke to me, but his mouth didn't move. Oh shit, because he's in my head.
Thanks for listening to this Graphic Audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,500 titles to choose from. Listen to over 150 binge-worthy series, from sci-fi to fantasy, to graphic novels, to mystery thrillers, to action-adventure, to westerns, and more. Check out our exclusive titles, available only in our dramatized adaptation format. If you'd like to listen to an entire series, you can conveniently purchase a download series set at graphicaudio.net. You can also earn loyalty reward points, redeemable towards future online purchases. Stream audiobooks immediately or download them to listen offline on your mobile phone or tablet using our Graphic Audio Access app, which is available on all Android and Apple devices. We like being radically different when it comes to our audiobook productions. Listen to A Movie in Your Mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Visit our web store today at graphicaudio.net.